Hi, my name is Lynn McTaggart. Welcome to my podcast, Living the New Science. In these podcasts, I'm covering some extraordinary discoveries by frontier scientists and other new thought leaders, and why this changes everything we think about how our world works and also how we should live our lives.
So, I want to also talk about tools for a new world, and one of the tools I want to talk about today actually is very close to hand. His name is Brian Hubbard. He is one of the top innovative British editors. He's been an editor of a publication for such notable places as the Financial Times, EMAP. He is the founder and co-editor of What Doctors Don't Tell You, and he's also the originator of an amazing new theory called Time Light. And he's going to tell us all about it. And there's a PS to all of this. I'm married to the guy, and I have been for about 34 years. So welcome, Brian.
Thank you, wife. Thank you very much for the invite. Lovely to be here. But then I always am.
So we want to talk to you about Brian's new theory. And it's a radical new way of looking at your life, looking at your past, and healing. So Brian, first of all, tell us in a nutshell what Time Light is.
Okay, well, it's a recognition that time is the single biggest driver of the human experience, essentially. And time is not, as we've been told, that it's a dimension, but rather that it's an energy. And time is an energy that gets released at the moment of trauma, upset, or essentially that moment when you are suddenly divided from the world and you see the world and your parents as separate from you. So it's the rise of the individual, if you like, that is the birth of time. And as I say, when you recognize and understand that time is actually the result of trauma, that then gets interpreted by the energy of time in so many different ways in our lives. So, for example, personality tics and kinks, if you like, all the way through to serious mental health conditions are, I believe, all in the foundation of time.
Now, when you talk about trauma, it's not just about being part of a blown-up building. You're talking about a whole spectrum of traumas. Do you want to go into that a little bit more?
Trauma is a clinical term, and actually it's a term I don't use once we get into the Time Light philosophy, because I think trauma means so many things to different people, and most people would say they weren't traumatized, and but probably they were. But because it's a term that, as you say, is usually reserved for war zones and what you will, it's a term I try to avoid if I can. But essentially, trauma is not what happens to you, but it's your inability to respond to it. And that's the fundamental point about trauma. It's our inability to respond to things.
I mean, it's a taking away of your power.
Yeah.
It's a taking away of your power. So your teacher shouts at you or tells you you're stupid at math and you're only 7 years old. So you don't feel that you're able to really respond in a way that your grown-up self might. Yeah. And that is the thing that lingers on.
Yeah. But just to finish that point, I mean, we think of trauma as a childhood experience. But fully 40% of all trauma happens when you're an adult. Mm. And that can happen with, anything, really, from divorce to, your partner having an affair to a child dying or whatever can also be traumatic. And as I say, 40% are actually occurring in adulthood.
So one way of categorizing them are the 18 adverse childhood events. Do you want to talk to
that
a bit?
Yeah, again, we're mixing up our definitions here a bit, but In 1997, the researchers from Kaiser Permanente put together a study, I think it involved over 1,000 people, and they classified 18 different things that could happen to you as a kid, and they called them adverse childhood events, or ACEs. And, you know, they range from relatively benign things happening, such as you came home but your parents weren't there, all the way through to incest, rape, parents divorcing, parents taking drugs, etc., etc. But the interesting thing about this, and this was one of the really first endorsements of the timelight philosophy, whatever you want to call it, I actually call it a spiritual therapy, but anyway, but this was a really early endorsement that I'm onto something. There is something in my own discoveries about timeline that seemed to, as I say, underpin it. And it was this, as I say, the Kaiser Permanente people were looking at childhood events. 18 of them were defined by the researchers. There, of course, are many more. But anyway, they found that those who had experienced 6 of them were something like more likely to die prematurely by up to 20 years prematurely compared to others who experienced, I think, 3 or fewer. And this went through a whole range of chronic health problems as well. So we were also seeing things like arthritis, diabetes, heart disease, cancers. They were all had a raised risk if people had 3 to 4 or more ACEs. And I think this is incredibly important because, and indeed it's been recognized, it's now recognized as, I think, the 4th major cause of death in the West, but it's one that is still not really acknowledged, but nonetheless it's there. But really, so why did this underpin and endorse timeline? Well, because no one was actually taking the step beyond that. They were just recognizing the pattern that ACEs were a contributing factor and maybe the main driver of premature death, of cancers, etc. But no one was actually asking the question, okay, so why? Well, why should it be that, you know, something happening to you as a kid affects you as an adult? And they didn't answer and haven't answered that question. But they talk about the biological processes that happen when after trauma or an ACE, whatever you want to, however you want to express it. And they talk about things like the amygdala section of the brain resizing. They talk about biochemical processes that go through the body, and these are typical of a traumatized person. But again, you have to say, okay, well, that's great. As if that then is the definition of what's going on, but it's not, because if something is changing the shape of your brain, there has to be an energy behind that. There has to be an energy that drives chronic disease. There has to be an energy that drives premature death. There has to be an energy that drives the shape of your brain, or changes the shape of your brain, and drives biochemical processes. And that energy I put forward is what I call time. It is the energy of the trauma itself. And then it sort of makes sense. But it also fundamentally changes what therapy is, because if what I'm saying is true, and I suggest to test it in your own lives, don't just go on what I'm saying, but if what I'm saying is true, you fundamentally change therapy, because you are no longer trying to treat a problem, anxiety, depression, etc. You instead are changing your relationship to the energy of that event, or your relationship to time. And that is fundamentally different. And that really, to me, is a radical departure from current therapy.
Oh, absolutely. Well, let's just dive into that for a bit. I mean, the other hat we wear is we're both editors of What Doctors Don't Tell You, which we have been running just about as long as we've been married. And in that, we've been seeing that psychiatry isn't working very well. Do you want to just talk to that a bit?
Yeah, Brian? Sure, by all means. I mean, look, I don't want to down speak about any therapy if you're getting help from anything, well, great, good for you. But fundamentally, psychiatry has had a pretty ragged history. And it really only came into its own after the American Civil War in the 1860s, because men were coming home and they were shell-shocked. It's what we call now PTSD, but they didn't have that term then. But they were seeing people who were traumatized and affected by the war. And that essentially was the birth of, I suppose, modern psychiatry. Prior to that, psychiatric conditions were entirely the result of alcoholism or excessive masturbation. So it took that civil war to say, no, there is something more profound than that going on. But until really the birth of the pharmaceutical industry, you know, the psychiatric profession didn't have many places to go. And really they were only starting to embrace Freudian psychology in the 1960s. I mean, he'd said most of his stuff in 1890. But the problem with that was, of course, much of the American health system is driven by insurance, which therefore is driven by results. And Freudian psychiatry or psychology doesn't give you an end date. It doesn't say you'll be okay in 2 weeks' time. This is no good for the insurance industry, at which point the pharmaceutical industry's ears perked up and said, well, we can come up with psychiatric drugs for you. But what they did, and this is really where it started to go badly wrong, because at that point, when they got involved, we saw the birth of different definitions of psychiatric disorders. And the earlier Bibles of the psychiatric industry were reporting something like, in the 50s, were reporting something like 100 mental conditions, which to me still sounds like an awful lot. But they said it's about 100. But you know, it was anything from being frightened of birds to, you know, being traumatized by a litter. You know, it's all sorts of extraordinary things. But the point is by 20, I think the last edition came out about 2012, they had listed 360 mental health problems. And why? Because you have so many different drugs for different health conditions. You split the problem up. So you are depressed, you're anxious, you're psychotic, you are bipolar, etc., etc. As different materializations of mental problems. But if it's true that mental conditions are actually an energetic imprint from the past, it's also possible that we are talking about a spectrum of disorders rather than disparate, separate disorders. So, in other words, there is only mental illness, or whatever you want to call the term, which is a matter of degree, but not type. But that, I think, is also something that needs to be explored, because I think, you know, the pharmaceutical industry has now given up on psychiatry, and both were very happy for the divorce, because psychiatry was also not being helped by the drugs. They're not getting great results from them. And so they both agreed to part, having pocketed a lot of money, and the psychiatric profession is now back to doing electrical convulsive therapy, the electric shock treatment, and so forth. And really, that's now become the go-to therapy of modern psychiatry. So that's the state of psychiatry today.
Well, exactly. And we write about every month about the drugs not working, mm-hmm. and depression, mm-hmm. particularly, it just not working.
No.
You know, either it is stupefying, or, and as you said, if you've been helped by a psychiatric drug, you know, good for you. And we do find that belief and interest in your therapist and connection with your doctor and all of those things are really key. So if you're connected with your doctor and believe in his therapies, that is more than half the battle. And that's certainly my work and intention. But what we've found, which is so interesting, and Brian and I worked together in retreats. We've just come out of a weekend workshop in Germany. We're doing a week-long retreat in Yorkshire in a place called Broughton Hall next September. And what we do is combine our work on time. So Brian's whole foundation is the fundamental of what we're doing, that time is an energy. But also, if time is an energy and we know in physics it's one big smeared out now, then a lot of my work is about essentially retro intention, that taking back your power can happen at any point because you're talking about one big smeared out present where that so-called trauma still exists in your body. And it's about, as we talked about, it's about retrieving your power, taking back your power in that situation, even if it happened 40 years ago, 50 years ago. So that's a lot of our work. And Brian also dives into something that's so interesting, you call the troublesome 20. So this is time heaviness, as you call it, made manifest. You want to talk about that a bit?
Sure. So, I mean, we all have, mental tics, behavior issues and such like. You know, and what we do with them was one of several things we do. We pretend we don't have them. We try to hide them by drinking, gambling, or whatever we will. Or we try to get therapy for them, especially if you have a thing like an anger problem, what have you. So anyway, so I listed 20 of them. And, you know, the list could have gone on. But let's stop at 20. You know, we've got to worry about ink and paper in the world. So I stopped at 20. But they range from anything from, always being late, or from, distrusting the world, or always expecting the worst, or whatever it might be. There's a range of things like that. But again, actually, each of the problems that we have is an invitation to actually transform your life. So you don't run away from them, you don't drown them in alcohol, but you actually explore them. And that's the starting point of the troublesome 20, is that this is your way in. It's what William Blake said was his golden thread that takes you to the very walls of Jerusalem. I can't promise you'll get to Jerusalem, but it is a golden thread, and it's something we're given. So rather than avoiding it or whatever, I invite people to explore them, to explore this issue, and really try to understand, well, fundamentally, why do you have them? You know, why should you distrust the world? Why should you have money problems or whatever it is? Why should you have these? And again, people don't think about that any more than, these psychiatrists have thought about why ACEs cause chronic health problems. But when you do look at that, you have to say, well, there's a pattern from somewhere. You could say, I was born like that. Well, explore beyond that, because there's something that went on before you were born. Or my parents were like that. So you say, okay, but what people call genetic patterning, I call memory. It's memory. It's not genetics. But the third and the most likely reason is, of course, because you have experienced this in your life. And that is why you now distrust people or whatever it might be. So having got this lovely lovely invitation from the world to explore, that is your starting point. You start from that point of where you are, and you start digging deeper to understand, okay, why? And then you ask again beyond that point, okay, so why? You ask again, so why? And you start uncovering layer after layer. I'm obviously there to help unfold all these things, but you'll go deeper and deeper from, yes, it must be the past, to understanding that the past must be an energy, from understanding that your relationship with time therefore must change. But to get to the fundamental kernel of their saying, so therefore what am I? Mm-hmm. Because you see, the deepest level of this is that we walk around believing that we are a actualized agent, independently able to make decisions and choices, to whom things happen. So, you know, the current model has it that I, independent agent Brian, has an anger problem, right? Which is somehow separate from me, which also would suggest, if you give it a moment's thought, would suggest that you've actually chosen it in that case. Because if you are an independent agent who chooses, well, you have chosen to have anger problems. And you say, well, that's crazy. Of course I haven't. No, you haven't. That's right. But in realizing that, you fundamentally changed who you think you are.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a concrete example. So everybody remembers a couple of years ago, the Academy Awards. Uh-huh. And we were all shocked when Will Smith went up and slapped
Chris Rock. Yeah.
So that wasn't, he was reacting not to that moment. He was reacting to something that happened in his past. So you want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, I mean, again, he sort of, in interviews afterwards, you know, Will Smith said, well, I don't really know why I did that. You know, I just had to. I was impelled to do it. And I was impelled because it really brought back all the experiences and memories I had as a child when my father was bullying and I believe was violently assaulting
Will Smith's mother.
When, as a five-year-old, he had to observe this and could do nothing about it. He was, you know, hopeless in that situation against a grown man. But here he was, now a grown man himself, seeing his wife being attacked verbally by Chris Rock.
He was making fun of her because she has alopecia.
Yeah.
So she you know, had her head shaved.
Yeah.
So he was making a joke. And it enraged Will Smith.
It did indeed. And he went up on stage and slapped him. But what was going on? Was Will Smith an independent agent, or was he driven by the energies of the past? Well, I pretty much know the answer, and I think everyone else does as well. And Will Smith himself essentially admitted it. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was impelled to do so.
Absolutely. And that's how, and a perfect illustration of this idea that you are the past. You are an agglutination of these misunderstood, not fully understood situations that continue to live through you. And that is really part of your, that's central to your work. It's part of what we do together when we do these workshops, is essentially going back to some of those important initial moments where you were first aware, for instance, of exhibiting or the cause of those troublesome 20, for instance. You know, if you have anger problems, if you always have money problems, if you're always late, where did that come from? And we oftentimes find going back to one of those essential seed moments and just playing that out in your head. And this is one of the exercises we do together. You play it out in your head, but you don't change fundamentally what happened. So say you're there, your teacher is humiliating you. She's put your name at the very bottom of a list of outcomes from a test. So you're the bottom, the dunce. And at the time you were hanging your head in shame and you couldn't say anything, you were 7 years old. But we take you back to then answering, saying what you wish you could have said if you were older and more mature. No, miss, I'm not stupid in math, but I'll understand it later. I don't understand what you're teaching now, but I will do in a few years. And that kind of thing seems to change the energy. Now, you have loads of other things that you do too, Brian, in terms of of helping people move forward into what you call no time. Tell everybody a little bit about this whole idea of no time and three selves.
Okay. Well, if you sort of extend the time model a bit further, then you would say, well, we are present time, so we're all here now. And present time encompasses the entire universe of the known universe, if you like, and is the home of sciences as well, and all the other things, and of immediate experience. And included in that would be the need for, you know, shelter and food and sex and so forth and so on. And these are the fundamental drivers of present time. Then you go, so things happen to you, and we start building up memories. Now, there are three types of memory according to the timeline model. We've spoken mostly about psychological past, the traumas, the ACEs, the things that upset you that essentially divide you from the world, and their psychological past. But there are two other memories, and one is called the narrative memory. So I know my own story, which is that my name, where I was born, the religion I was brought up in, if any, all these things, where I live, if you like. And then the final one is called knowledge memory. So I remember how to do things, whether it's to tie a shoelace or where I park my car or whatever it might be. All of these are actually memories. And the fact that I know how to tie my shoelace is because I remember how to do it. It may be an instinctive memory, but nonetheless, it is a memory. And this is just interesting to say as an aside that it's in fact the fusion of two memories, which are the home of conflict and war, which is the narrative of the psychological memories. So it's the fusion of my story, my people's story, my nation's story, coupled with psychological hurts, which actually form the basis of all conflict that's ever happened on this planet. And it's an extraordinary thought that actually we go to war and we fight because of memory. But that is true. It's exactly what we do. I guess we always will until we wake up to what is going on, you know. And I think the sadness, I mean, we both travel around the world and we see the most remarkable human beings, the most wonderful people, you know, and it's a very real moment, isn't it, when we meet people and we're in contact with them and you just look into their eyes. You know, it's a pure moment. There's no, you know, there's no memory. There's no history with that. Mm. And you sort of see these wonderful people. You think, well, how could there ever be war?
Yeah.
And the reason why is because, you know, they fall back on their memories. And that's why there's war. But in that moment of pure human existence, there is no possibility of war, you know. But that's the truth.
Yeah.
And the final part of ourselves, the third part, is no time. And that's our saving grace. Now, note I call it the potential center, because that is where all potential happens. It's also no time, because it's eternal, and that's what we are. And, you know, fundamentally, we all have to go through this. You know, it is the lot of the human condition to go through all the things I've just been talking about. You know, no one gets a free pass here.
No.
And so, but we have to go through that and understand that for no time to come into our lives, into the world.
Now, that's something that you understand personally because you went through it.
Mm.
I mean, part of this was really your own journey, too, in understanding a very difficult past in childhood. You know, I witnessed so much of this in our first years of marriage too. You had a pretty abusive father, a lovely mother, but a father who was essentially 5 years old.
Mm. Well, that's right. I mean, that's where the whole timeline thing came from, because ultimately I'd had enough, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I was Peter Finch. I'm angry as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And that was a reference to which movie was that?
Network
is a reference to Network. Anyway, so I was abused as a child for about 6 or 7 years, and my mother really didn't have the equipment to deal with this with my father.
You should say emotional abuse.
Emotional abuse, yes, it was.
He wasn't physical.
But nonetheless, it wasn't a great, you know, start. And
well, he didn't call you by name for the first 7 years.
He did not. He whistled for me for about 7 years. And to this day, I salivate when anybody whistles. And I ask for a biscuit. No, I don't. But as a result of that, you know, I grew up as an adult really with no confidence at all, which is not really surprising if you've not been, you know, recognized as a human being. And then from that, I plunged into chronic depression. And it was really that drive to understand what had happened to me. And I had not made the connection between my depression and childhood abuse. It had not occurred to me. You know, duh. But then, of course, it's obvious after the fact, but actually most people do not realise that connection. You know, depression is something that's happened to them, but they don't really know why. It's one of those things that happens. But actually, when you suddenly realise that direct route to you know, your childhood and the abuse you suffered, you know, is a revelation. And then I suppose there were a few clues along the way. One was my own father's death, who, when I went to see him, was in bed and he just said he'd had enough, you know.
He was about 90 then.
He was 90 and he said I'd had enough. But, you know, he'd also been, you know, examined a few years prior when they said he had the heart of something like a 70-year-old, you know, someone 20 years younger. But nonetheless, there he was in bed and saying he'd had enough. And 3 days later, he indeed died. And, you know, not such an uncommon experience, I think, that a lot of old people really feel they've had enough. But you have to wonder, well, had enough of what exactly, you know? But that was a clue. And then another clue came along years later, which was this book about ghosts by a professor called Ian Stevenson in Canada. And he pretty much sort of, you know, gambled his entire academic career on discovering what ghosts were. This is not a favoured subject by his institution, but nonetheless, he felt determined to find out. And the stories were quite remarkable. And, you know, whether you believe in ghosts or not, it's a strong metaphor. And it's a strong metaphor for a past that continues, that there is an energy around things that have happened. And that was it. And then I put the book down and this enormous revelation came to me. And it was this extraordinary expression which crashed into my head, you know, that to which you do not fully attend shall weigh you down. I didn't know where it came from, I don't to this day, and I'm still figuring it out. I'm still, you know, it is still the essence of timeline, because it has to be, because it was something given somehow, I don't know what it was. And, you know, you explore those two elements, that to which you do not fully attend. Well, what does that mean? It means I was not fully there. I was not fully present at the moment when I suffered the trauma or the experience. Therefore, it has left an imprint on me. And I do invite people to live a life of 360 degrees. Most people live a life of about 90 degrees, you know, but and it gets better at 180, but I invite people to look at 360 degree living. That to which you do not fully attend shall weigh you down, which is the past, then accumulating and forming so many selves of yourself, if you like, none of which are actually you. And because the only essential self that is you is that which is eternal, which is timeless. But we have this aggregation of time from experience, which clouds that. And so that's how it is. That is the human condition in three sentences without a tea break.
Yeah. But the great news is we've been seeing in the work that we've been doing remarkable transformations. I'm going to think about one person who came to our event last September, our retreat, who had always been bullied by his stepfather, who essentially didn't want him and kept telling him how stupid he was and how he didn't get things, etc. And in our retreat, we talked with him, and I remember you talking with him and particularly helping him to see this in the round, to talk to his stepfather again, and also to forgive him. That's another big piece of the work that we do, the work that you do, is on helping people to forgive. So we change the energy, but then we also help them to see things really in 360 degrees, which is what that person, the perpetrator, let's call them, what the situation was for them. And in your father's instance, he was a very unrealized person, an unexamined person. His life was not examined in any way to see how he was the architect of so much misfortune in his life. And he decided to take it out on his three sons, you in particular. So what we've seen is work that we can do energetically that really transforms this human tragedy into a way of going forward, into a revelation for the people and also a healing. So we've seen that. We saw a woman reverse her stage 4 cancer through the week of our workshop. We've seen other people forgive, even abusive husbands. We had somebody in our group last year who had a totally abusive husband, dragged her down the stairs, you know, hit her, all kinds of things. She escaped from him with their child and divorced him, thought she'd dealt with the whole thing. Turned out in the workshop, she recognized she hadn't, and she'd completed it by forgiving and recognizing as well that perhaps she had taken part in this whole difficulty by not having the strength to leave before. So much of this work is really about healing that powerlessness and understanding things from the other person's point of view too, no matter how vile they may have been. So, Brian, you've got a couple of things. We have a couple of things coming up. First of all, you should know he is the author of a book called The Untrue Story of You, which is really the fundamentals of Timelight, published by Hay House in America and the UK. And I think a few other countries like Sweden and the Netherlands. You have a live event coming up, a live free event coming up.
I do.
And what's going to happen in that?
Yeah, it's a totally money-free event, free of charge, where I'm going to sort of spend some time talking about Timelight, but also it's interactive. So it's going to be a live webinar. So if you come on the live webinar, obviously it's going to be recorded as well. Come on live. If we can get round to people and try to answer some of their individual issues there and then, I'll endeavour to do that. And you have to go to my website, though, to sign up.
And your website is?
timelight.co.uk, but there's a little hyphen between time and light. time-light.co.uk.
So time-light.co.uk.
That's it.
And it is on the 20th of April.
Yep.
And it's 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, 5 p.m. UK, 6 p.m. Europe. And we have something else. So people sign up. If you can sign up on the website, you can come to his free event. You can ask Brian any kind of question about Timelight, and he'll give you more detail about how this all works and how it's healing so many people around the world. We're seeing it ourselves. Now, if any of you want to actually participate in something with us in person, we're both running our Heal Your Past retreat at the beautiful, historic 16th century stately home, Broughton Hall in Skipton, Yorkshire. We're running it from the 1st to the 8th of September this year. So it's your chance to stay in the runner-up location of Downton Abbey. There are also historic cottages that we'll be taking out as well, and you'll be with us in this beautiful spiritual place, which is also the home of all of the Princeton University PEAR equipment. Is now housed at Broughton and is working. So you get a chance to play with those REG machines yourself. And there are so many other aspects to this place that made us decide that this is the perfect place for our retreat. It's got a labyrinth, it's got an amazing fire pit. We have a stately home dinner with a string quartet. We have a cosmic garden experience. There's wild swimming and so much more. 3,000 acres is just beautiful. So if you want to find out more about that, you can find it on my website, lynnmctaggart.com. So, Brian, thank you for being a guest here on my podcast.
That is a long way to come.
We talk about this.
Do you pay travel expenses?
From the next room. So, from the next room and from both of us, thank you for listening to Living the New Science and Tools for a New World. I hope you'll take some of this out into your life and work toward becoming, as Brian puts it, time light. Thanks for listening.